The 1-2. He struck him out. Blew it by him. 10 Ks in his Dodger debut. A night to remember for Max Scherzer and everybody here. This is moments ago. A curtain call in his Dodger debut.
You know, not everybody is great at being rich. Some squander their fortunes, some billionaires are still somehow emotionally invested in Twitter, and then there are the Los Angeles Dodgers, who use their absurd wealth to trade for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner at the trade deadline. So today, Jeff Passan takes us inside the empire atop the major leagues, and he explains how the sports spending spree is giving us a glimpse into baseball's future. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, August 10th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Jeff, we're now on the other side of the anarchy that was the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. And now that you can sort of look back at everything, I mean, how much Mountain Dew did you end up actually consuming?
Let's clarify first. It's Diet Mountain Dew, Pablo.
Jeff Passan is an MLB insider for ESPN who is desperately trying to catch up on sleep. Oh, yeah, of course.
And of course. There was one point on the day of the deadline where I went back to my hotel in Bristol. It had been a productive day. It had been a whirlwind day. There were fake accounts of me on Twitter that were created, causing all kinds of chaos.
Many fake Passans.
Yeah, a lot of fake Passans out there. And I was surveying the landscape of my hotel room, and I saw 9 empty Diet Mountain Dew bottles on the ground.
Well, hold on, Jeff, because for people who aren't familiar with not just your obviously crippling addiction to Diet Mountain Dew, but also like the phenomenon of having a fake version of yourself or multiple fake versions of yourself populating the internet, explain what that is like.
I'm in the stage of grief where I just accept the fact that people are going to use my profile picture, tweak my name slightly.
Right, like a consonant or a vowel here or there.
In this case, it was the addition of 2 consonants and the subtraction of 1. So the perpetrator here was at JEFFFPASANN. Fairly prominent people fell for this idea.
So what was Jeff saying with the 3 S?
Jeff of a Passan was saying that Chris Bryant had been traded to the Yankees. This was about a half hour before the deadline, maybe 45 minutes. And a colleague of ours who will go unnamed amplified this. Fell for it. In the middle of me trying to figure out where Chris Bryant actually is going, I text the colleague, "No! Fake! Delete!" And he writes back, "Oh, LOL." And if the most flawed decision-making I made over that particularly harried 48 hours was not to go out and report that Max Scherzer was going to the Padres, but was to yell at people who are following for fake accounts, I feel like my grievous sin in that case will be forgiven by both higher powers and those mere mortals here on Earth.
Officer, I'm sorry. I've been chugging gallons of Diet Mountain Dew. But in the meantime, like, there is a lot to catch up on, Jeff, now that you have your wits about you. And I feel like the team that is most heavily caffeinated, their fan base, likewise, would be the Los Angeles Dodgers. Because the defending World Series champions had everything, it seemed like, preseason. And now, at midseason, they have even more. So what did they do at the break?
All they did was go out and get the 2 best players on the market. in Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. And they did this in a very cunning Dodger-style way. They did it the same way that they went out and got Mookie Betts. They did it the same way they got Manny Machado at the deadline. They did it the same way they got Yu Darvish at the deadline. They were just more aggressive than everyone else. And it's a matter of being aggressive because you have the things in place that allow you to. Mm. And the first thing there is money, of course. The Dodgers have more of it than every team outside the New York Yankees, and they may have more of it than the New York Yankees. And they are not afraid to go out and spend. But what the Dodgers do is that they have not just a financial machine, but a player development machine as well, that allows them to continue recycling players who are not as good to other teams as they are to the Dodgers. And then the Dodgers help turn them through that development into great prospects who they then can go and trade for great major league players. And they can also, by the way, bring them up as well and keep them on the roster if they really do like them.
Well, Jeff, I mean, the fact that you just said that this team might have more money than the Yankees, but simultaneously is doing the very thing that the Yankees have said they can't do because they're a team with a lot of money, which is develop a farm system that replenishes the pipeline. Yeah. I mean, Jeff, it just occurs to me that some entities, some people are really good at being rich.
We tend to view sports as a top-down thing where everybody is striving to be like the rich team, like the team at the top. For years, though, the Tampa Bay Rays have been the model for how to run a developmental organization. And when the Dodgers went out and hired Andrew Friedman as president from the Rays and brought him to Los Angeles, it was not just because he could go and spend the money. It was because they wanted him to put the processes in place that allowed them to go and get the prospects that they do and to develop the talent they do. And I look at the Dodgers like the Rodeo Drive Rays. They are taking these principles that have found success down in Tampa Bay in a small market and taken them to an extremely moneyed organization where if you do both of them, you pretty much become unstoppable. I mean, when Corey Seager came off the injured list over the weekend and you saw the lineup that the Dodgers trotted out, Trey Turner coming off the COVID injured list, hitting first. Max Muncy, who with Fernando Tatis Jr. hurt and Ronald Acuna Jr. hurt, is in the MVP race. Betts hitting third. Corey Seager hitting fourth. Justin Turner, fifth. Will Smith, a guy who's got an 800-plus OPS. Chris Taylor, who aside from Muncy, has arguably been the best hitter on the Dodgers team this season, seventh. And Cody Bellinger, who was MVP a few years ago, hitting eighth. Like, what are we doing here?
Hearing you recite that batting order and just watching this team, it makes me feel like Cody Bellinger looks. It makes me feel like I have ingested something that is truly psychedelic, challenging my grasp on reality.
And by the way, AJ Pollock, who's OPSing almost 900 this season, hitting over 300, bench, Albert Pujols.
I forgot about Pujols.
Yeah, who is not, he's not who he once was, granted. He's still Albert Pujols.
Sin for Justin Turner. 3-0 green light and a ball hit to the moon! Career home run 676. Way up there off of the bat of Albert Pujols.
Bench.
Wait, so hold on though. Why is it then that the Dodgers, with all of that largesse, also felt it necessary to go and plug in Max Scherzer and to go and plug in Trey Turner?
I think there are two reasons. I think one, the Dodgers recognize that windows in sports and windows in baseball especially have a very interesting way of slamming shut with your fingers still in them. And that as long as you feel like you have an opportunity to go out and win a championship and you have the means to do so, then it's your duty. I think the Dodgers recognize that even though for the majority of the season they've had a record that's been somewhere in the vicinity of second best in baseball, you know, usually second, third, fourth, somewhere there, the team that's had the best record in baseball all season is still in their division. And the San Francisco Giants are not a team to be taken lightly or to be trifled with.
So I understand, Jeff, that the Giants are a legit threat in this division and that nothing should be taken for granted. But I imagine part of that sort of window dynamic where you fear your hand getting injured underneath, some of that has to do with the starting pitchers, right? Because there is a certain amount of chaos when you mention Clayton Kershaw in the present tense, and especially when you mention Trevor Bauer in the present tense.
Yeah, I don't think anyone anticipates Trevor Bauer is going to be back anytime soon. There are some people who don't think he's ever going to be back with the Dodgers. And we're anticipating some clarity from the Pasadena Police Department on the sexual assault allegations against him, whether he's going to be charged over the next couple of weeks. But even then, I just don't feel like the Dodgers want him back. I think the entire situation has become an optical nightmare beyond the fact that a woman had her eyes blackened and her face bruised and swollen, and was, whether it was consensual or not, was beaten up. And I think the Dodgers understand the look of that and how it is antithetical to how they want to be perceived throughout not just Los Angeles, but the country. The Clayton Kershaw situation is a little bit different. And it's interesting because this is a guy who really has not had arm problems before. Most of his issues have been with his back. And he was anticipating being back in August and hoping to be back in August, but they're going to be pushing that back until September. And it makes sense, Pablo, because Clayton Kershaw, as diminished of a role as he has in a rotation that includes Max Scherzer and Walker Buehler and Julio Urias, and if he comes back from injury, Tony Gonsolin, I mean, they have a lot of pitchers there. It's such an interesting dynamic because teams that spend $40 million a year on a pitcher and have $102 million committed over three seasons would look at this as an unmitigated disaster. And that, to me, has always been the biggest advantage of the financial behemoths in baseball. It's not necessarily their ability to go out and buy whoever they want. It's their ability to withstand one of those contracts going sideways and still be good.
All right, Jeff, coming up, I want to take a look at the other moves that were made at the deadline, the fan bases whose souls seem to have been crushed, and what all of it says about the health and direction of this game.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So beyond the Rodeo Drive Rays, Jeff, as you've now christened the Los Angeles Dodgers, the second biggest story of this entire deadline period was the Chicago Cubs, as you alluded to. The Cubs tore down the team that won the franchise's first World Series in 108 years back in 2016. But at the deadline, they dealt away the following, and this is a an emotionally damaging list for Cubs fans. Chris Bryant to the Giants, Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees, Craig Kimbrell to the White Sox, Javier Baez to the Mets. I've been seeing like montages and almost funereal memes about all of this from Chicago, Jeff.
I will remember you.
Like, this whole week was a Sarah McLachlan song for Cubs fans.
It felt like the saddest parts of Lilith Fair for Cubs fans. So why? Why, Jeff? Why the fire sale? Why all of this pain?
I think there are a couple of things that we can look at. The Chicago Cubs, following the 2016 season, Pablo, were supposed to be starting a dynastic run in which they didn't just win their first championship in 108 years, but they started a string of championships that was going to be similar to the New York Yankees in the late 90s. The Chicago Cubs wound up winning zero more championships. They acted like a rich enough team, but not a rich team that was going to go out there and try and get a fistful of rings. And if there is a criticism to be levied toward ownership, I think it is very fair. And I think it's fair, especially in the context of where some of the money the Cubs were making was going, which was back to the organization essentially buying the entire neighborhood of what's now called Wrigleyville.
So the Cubs took all the money from their promising would-be dynasty and put a bunch of it in real estate.
Yeah, into capital improvements.
as much as infrastructure is underrated in American life, I feel like that is not the thing that you want to see your team doing when you have a would-be dynasty on the table.
Well, it's interesting, Pablo, because the Ricketts family needs to put its money where its mouth is. And remember, we've been through this song and dance before. We're not spending now because we're going to spend in the future. Well, Cubs totally bottomed out, tanked, got Bryant, got Baez, got Rizzo, signed John Lester, signed Jason Hayward, won a championship. So there is a formula that has come to fruition in the past.
Sure.
The second part, though, the present day element of this is Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez are all going to be free agents this winter. And it turns out teams still like these players. And the fact that the Cubs got as much as they did in prospect capital in return highlights the disappointment of the last 4 years, the last 5 years with this Cubs team, and you asking yourself, how the hell didn't they win?
So Jeff, it sounds like, just to be clear about this, the report card you're giving the Cubs on the return, the prospects they got in exchange for all of these heartfelt, montage-worthy names, you sound like they got good value.
Yeah. The Cubs did well. The return for Anthony Rizzo kind of surprised the industry because, you know, a lot of people were just assuming it makes sense that he goes to Boston. The Yankees just went and like, it was like roller derby. They just elbowed the Red Sox right out of the way and like stole their guy.
Oh, it felt good, I think.
Listen, Pablo, we've had the Yankee loathing podcast.
We have.
The Yankees invigorated themselves and remade their team at the deadline by getting two guys who make complete sense. And if COVID and lack of vaccines do not get in the way of the Yankees.
Well, here we are, Ed. I know Joey Gallo is just tomahawking at absurd launch angle home runs at the stadium, which we had discussed. I love that. What I don't love, though, is that Anthony Rizzo is now in COVID protocol. So to catch people up on what is up with Rizzo and the virus as the Yankees continue to be plagued by the plague, What do we need to know here?
Beyond the two outbreaks, Garrett Cole hitting the injured list with COVID, and now Rizzo, who quite famously said earlier this year, I'm not getting vaccinated.
For me, it's just one of those things where I'm definitely not against getting it. It's just, I think what I've said all along to our doctor is just taking some more time to see the data on all of it. As of right now, like I said, for personal reasons, it's obviously not an easy decision to make, but I think it's best for me and my family right now.
It surprised a lot of people, actually, because he is someone who survived cancer. Mm-hmm. And so one would figure with pre-existing conditions that he would be on board. He was not. And he was a big reason that the Chicago Cubs actually had not reached 85% vaccination threshold, because Anthony Rizzo's been here forever. He's won a World Series. He's the face of the franchise. If he's not doing it, then why should I?
Yeah, that's not ideal leadership, Jeff, by any stretch of the imagination. But I do want to talk about the people who were the runners-up for Rizzo's services, because the Boston Red Sox, man, if they're fading and maybe they're even hearing the faint strains of Sarah McLachlan in the distance themselves, what does all that say about the expectations that the Red Sox were just going to run away with this whole division?
Yeah, they're not running away with a whole lot. If anyone's running away, I think it's going to be Tampa Bay. The Red Sox flaws, which have been there sort of, if you looked and squinted all season long, have really shown themselves recently. When you have a pitching staff that seems like it's been going on smoke and mirrors all season long, sometimes the smoke clears and the mirror shatters. And the Red Sox are thankful that Chris Sale is going to be back soon. And almost, I almost wonder if there's going to be too much of a reliance on him, or the expectations are too high for a guy who's coming off Tommy John surgery. But you see the way he's been pitching in his minor league rehab starts, Pablo. And when he comes back this Saturday, as anticipated, it's going to be quite a sight.
I do want to end with just a general question, because you pay attention to this more than anybody. When you look around Major League Baseball, of all the things we did not yet touch on, what has jumped out to you about the way that this deadline behaved and the way the sport seems to be looking going forward?
First off, the fact that organizations were willing to give up top prospects and were willing to overpay beyond what the industry has come to expect at the trade deadline was actually nice to see. I think it's illustrative of the fact that as good as the Dodgers are, teams don't feel like they are completely unbeatable. Even if there are flaws on our team, we feel like we have a chance this year. And we're willing to give up a piece of the future to try and steal the present. There's also, and I was talking with someone who's pretty prominent on the player side in union leadership about how teams now are using the regular season in a way that they used to use the off season. They're trying to get better for the future. And you wonder why free agency has been diminished in some ways. I think it's because a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers that would have faced pressure to go out and sign Corey Seager and to drive that market now has Trey Turner and has no pressure whatsoever to go out and sign Corey Seager.
Yeah.
And looking back at this trade deadline and seeing the teams that were prescient about the types of players that they acquired and if they fit more with the type of game that baseball is going to be pushing, which in my head is going to be more contact-oriented. It's going to be driven more toward pace of play picking up. Seeing the Cubs get a guy like Nick Madrigal, not a surprise there.
Well, let me try and salvage something of the Cubs fans' psyche at the very end here, Jeff, by briefly putting on a tinfoil hat. the guy who is going to be involved in directing the future of the game is a gentleman named Theo Epstein. And that same gentleman used to be the guy running the Chicago Cubs. I am just curious if there is anything to the theory that maybe the Cubs went into this rebuild having some information via the Theo Epstein connection that the rest of baseball may not have been privy to.
It's possible. I say this without any knowledge, of course, of transfer of information, but the fact is, Jed Hoyer, who's the Cubs president of baseball operations now, who was in Theo Epstein's old job, was Theo Epstein's consigliere for the entirety of their time in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying that Jed went to Theo and said, hey, hook us up with some information here so we know where this is going. I think that Jed Hoyer probably had heard for years what Theo Epstein would do to change baseball and probably operated with that in mind, but not that as the driving force behind the move. There are much greater forces at work here than what Theo Epstein is trying to get done.
Jeff Passan, thank you for the record for being verifiably not Jeff Passan.
Thank you, Pablo. You sold that very well.
All right, coming up, what an NFL wide receiver and an Italian women's soccer team, very unfortunately, have in common.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. So, not a whole lot of people are talking about this Devin Funchess thing. And if you missed this Devin Funchess thing entirely, as I suspect you did, here's what the Packers receiver said in a press conference over the weekend while talking about reading reporters' faces in the age of masks.
I like smiles, you know. I can tell you smiling. I can see your face. I can see the face. Everybody go tinky, and that's when I know it's...
Now, I don't think Devin Funchess intended to insult billions of people when he used the word chinky while pointing to the corners of his own eyes and smiling. And I happen to have the same read on the Juventus women's soccer team, incidentally, which very randomly tweeted out a photo 2 days before Funchess spoke, where one of their players, Cecilia Salvai, was seen smiling and pulling her eyes back while wearing an orange disc cone as some sort of rice paddy style hat. But while Funchess and Juventus have both apologized, which, you know, cool, I guess, I mostly just wanted to be clear about something here. The term chink stands atop the medal stand of the most classic, and I mean textbook, anti-Asian racial slurs. And the whole squinty slant eye stuff, that's not some obscure thing to us either. That's basically the free bird of anti-Asian racist gestures. I am not exaggerating when I tell you that pretty much every Asian American person I know has been disrespected, degraded, honestly, in these ways, intentionally or not, in our own lives. So the most disturbing thing about Funchess and Juventus innocently doing that stuff is not that, you know, we Asians may have heard those words and seen those gestures and instantly been triggered into some kind of emotional devastation. It's actually just the simple fact that so many people still have zero functional idea what the most obvious forms of anti-Asian racism even are. I mean, just think about how small the ask is here, because nobody's even being asked to know why this stuff is insanely disrespectful. Although, sure, it would be nice if people read up on the history of anti-Asian racism, from the Chinese Exclusion Act to Vincent Chin to, you know, everything this year. But instead, all people are really being asked to know is an Asian person, you know, like in real life. And they truly don't. Because we could probably cut down on stuff exactly like this happening again and again and again if people would just consider what an actual Asian person might think about whatever it is you happen to be saying. Almost as if we're here too, and looking at you right in the eye. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.